So first there is the Dharma talk of the precipitation, ice, snow, rain, train going by in the distance, a rumble of traffic. The broad, long tongue of the Buddha. The teaching, the Dharma, revealing itself in its infinite generosity, a limitless creativity appearing now as this and now as that. And when we settle down a little so that we can hear, settle down a little so we can walk, settle down a little so we can breathe, we come back to our senses. Everything reveals this mysterious truth. This is a beginner's mind. Suzuki Roshi says the beginner's mind is the mind of sufficiency. The mind that doesn't have to go off searching somewhere else. He says the beginner's mind is empty. And he goes on to say empty simply means ready. Laura in her a lovely talk this morning talked about empty being translated as the reservoir of limitless possibility. And so out of the deep silence, we sometimes call this the Dharmakaya. The body of Buddha, that is this deep stillness, this reservoir. A reservoir of limitless possibility. This mind that is sufficient, not that it's closed, not that it is separate, in fact, just the opposite. And over these past 2.5 weeks, we have all been settling. Settling into our lives. Quite a thing in the midst of this rushing world, this world that seems to speed up more and more and more. In this world of great suffering, here in this country, the United States, of such such a vast wealth and resources, and yet in this country so many people suffering, suffering living lives of great distress, instability, great danger. And as we sit, cultivating this beginner's mind, cultivating this sufficiency of the moment, we meet all of the different selves. In fact, we say when one person sits, the whole universe sits. We talked earlier on about the posture and this cosmic mudra, this hand position, and this image of holding the whole universe in our hands and arms. Generally, we imagine that we are separate, that we are born into this world that was here before us, and we all can study our history and imagine that's true. And imagine that when we die, then the world will go on without us. And in some ways, this fits the story of our life. But in Zen, we are encouraged to look more deeply into the real experience of being alive. This path of Zen is a religion. We have rituals and we have texts. And we have ways that we do things that have been passed down to us. But at its heart, this is not a sectarian enterprise. This is not about holding up one side as opposed to another side. It's not about having to believe a certain thing. But it is about being willing to look as directly as we can, to, as we have been saying over and over, face into each moment. In one of the chapters later on in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, called The Quality of Being, Suzuki tells the story of Dogen. And Dogen, of course, has been journeying with us in our study, as he was so present for Suzuki Roshi. And we've been reading sections from Dogen and appreciating his wonderful invitation. And Suzuki Roshi tells the story of Dogen, whose mother died when he was quite young. And at her funeral, he saw the incense smoke going up in the air and disappearing. And he was struck by the sense of the brevity of life, the evanescence, how quickly everything comes and goes. And Suzuki Roshi says that he felt very lonely. He felt very lonely. But that lonely feeling became stronger and stronger and flowered into enlightenment when he was 28 years old. So when he saw the smoke from the incense stick and felt the evanescence of life, he, Dogen, felt very lonely. But that lonely feeling became stronger and stronger and flowered into enlightenment when he was 28 years old. All of us in our own way know this lonely feeling. No matter who we are or what our position or what our relationships, this feeling of separation, of sometimes for some of us overwhelming loneliness. For me, one of the primary things that brought me to practice. I remember so vividly being in college and going to an Indian music concert. Melissa and I went to Wesleyan University, and they had this wonderful ethnomusicology department, so you could go and hear music from anywhere in the world. And there was one person on he wasn't on the faculty, but he had gone to Wesleyan and become an Indian music singer and actually gone to India and become something of a rock star in India, singing this very complex and difficult music, and went to a concert by this man, and couldn't understand a word he was singing, but it was quite a heartful song. And reading the translation in the program, the translation was, "Why must I sit outside the temple? I look in and see the gods inside the temple, but I am not allowed to go in." And something in that image and in his voice touched me so deeply, this sense of something calling to me, something that I was forever shut off from, could not reach. And this sense of separation. So hard to bear. And so I began my Zen practice hoping that this would get rid of this loneliness, get rid of this sense of separation. And in the first few years of my work with my teacher, George Bowman, in the early 90s, we talked a lot about this. And he said that this separation is included in the oneness. That it's not that there's separation and oneness, or that there's separation and the wholeness of life, but this separation is a demonstration of connection. And thinking about that wonderful waterfall at Yosemite that Steve talked about the other day, this image of the one river going off the top of the mountain and separating into drops. And each one of these drops, like a human life that appears out of the void, out of the reservoir of infinite possibility, life appears as me. And I think, oh no, I'm separate. And I forget We all forget, all of us born out of this great unity, coming from we don't know where, going to we don't know where. But we appear and we look in the mirror and we say, that must be me. We feel different. We feel separate. But Steve, in one of his comments, said, this separation is necessary. That the great river needs to separate to see itself, to wake up, to know itself. And this is the teaching that the big mind amplifies itself, creating waves, creating disturbance, in order to know itself. So this loneliness, this sense of separation, this suffering, again, is not, I mean, of course it's a problem, but in this lovely passage he said, the lonely feeling became stronger and stronger and flowered, blossomed into enlightenment. So this possibility that the very problem is the entry point, the very place that we most don't want to be, and that may be loneliness, it may be sadness, it may be dullness, whatever it is for you. This appearing, this wave of feeling, this wave of the state of mind, the story that is appearing. If we can be curious about it, if we can sit upright in the middle, as Reb Anderson so wonderfully says, sitting upright in the downtown of suffering. I don't know about you, but my downtown is pretty bleak and burned out sometimes. But everything that appears is none other than the Buddha appearing to us. And as we sang in the song of the Grass Roof Hermitage, in just this place, the whole world is here. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. And so the whole world is your true self. This world that was born with you. This world, self and world. There is no self without the world that it functions in. And each one of us lives in a universe that we co-create. And none of us can exchange our life for another. We cannot live someone else's life. We cannot eat for someone else. Oh, I'm really tired, honey. Would you eat dinner for me tonight? It doesn't work. So we have to eat our own food and live our own life and discover in everything we meet as we engage with it. Everything is us. Everything you encounter is your life. This vast field, this reservoir of limitless possibility appearing now as the sound of the rain, now as a tiredness in the body. This is the true self, your true way, right here. Thank you. So please sit comfortably. Questions, comments, observations. Jimmy.
Not to take the metaphor too far, but it seems like with that waterfall, that like if that's our lifespan, there's an awful lot of it as a drop, and I guess there's that idealistic sense or striving for the oneness, but you know, maybe I don't know how accurately I'm sensing, or if you comment on how much, you know, how much of it is accepting that separation and having a sense of or longing for, but then trying not to long for, you know, the river on the top and the bottom.
Yeah. Steve, do you have a comment on the drops? And
so what struck me in what you said is about the longing and how you know, in a way, I mean, kind of part of the story is, you know, the drops realize, you know, there's both separation, but still being water, right? And so, in that sense, not separate at all. But nonetheless, as a drop, there actually is this separation, right? This vivid life as an individual, and this, for me, it's kind of like a vague memory of once upon a time I was connected to everything, and right now it doesn't really seem that way, and there's this longing to be reunited with the whole, and that that this isn't actually a problem for the drop to have this sense of being one with, even in the midst of the separation, and that it's actually quite a sweet thing. And I think for me, and probably for you and others, this longing is the thing that brings us here and causes us to connect deeply with our life and to kind of refresh this sense of being one with everything through our practice and our diving into mixed metaphors.
And Melissa was saying the other day about Rumi's love dogs, I want burning, and usually we think there's the longing and then there's the thing we long for, but of course but I think the longing is an expression of what we long for. You know, think of all the beautiful poetry and songs of this longing. As you're saying, a kind of sweetness, not already complete, in that. So we don't have to get rid of the longing, but longing appears as longing. And that the separation is the great adventure. You know, this teaching that we can only wake up in this human realm, and this human realm is human because of this self-consciousness, this self-awareness. So sometimes appears as such a problem, these minds and what we do, but also the possibility to see the beauty of the sky when you look up. You know, even for a moment, it's an extraordinary thing. And to feel these stirrings in our heart, such an opportunity. Yeah, thanks. Oh, why don't we listen to the rain a little more?